Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's Open Systems Media eCast titled 15 Billion Connected Devices Powered by the Embedded Internet. This eCast is sponsored by Intel. My name is Jerry Gipper, and I am the Editorial Director for Embedded Computing Design, and I'll be moderating today's event. Before we start, I'd like to point out a couple of items for you to note about your eCast viewer console. First, you should notice the submit question area on the lower left. At the end of the presentations, we will address selected questions as time permits. You can submit your questions at any time during today's session. We're also going to keep the event live for 15 additional minutes at the end to handle chat questions. You're invited to stay online and electronically chat with the sponsors with additional questions. Second, I'd like you to notice the Enlarge Slides button at the bottom. This enlarges your view of the slides as they are presented and makes it easier to view the material. During today's presentations, we'll also have a couple of poll questions. Please make sure you disable your pop-up blocker if you wish to participate in those questions. So let's go ahead and get started. Being connected today is one of the fastest growing trends in the industry. Electronic devices are becoming connected more and more every day. I did a little research on some of the numbers, and in 1984, the number of internet devices was 1,000. By 1992, it was 1 million, and by 2008, it was 1 billion. It's quickly pushing 2 billion this year. But can you imagine 15 billion intelligent connected devices? This is the expectation by 2015, according to the research firm IDC. Today, millions of intelligent devices are already connected and controlling each other without the need for human intervention. There are several layers of technology needed to make all this happen, and today we'll focus on the infrastructure technology that will allow these billions of devices to be interconnected. This eCast will explore how Intel architecture processors, including the new Intel Xeon 5500 processor series for embedded computing, can help facilitate this phenomenal growth. The ability to deliver standards-based, secure, customizable boards and systems will allow companies developing military, aerospace, government, medical, communication, storage, and industrial applications to design revolutionary devices that will play a big role in the embedded internet. Intel Embedded and Communications Alliance members like Trenton Technology play a significant role in this transformation. 15 billion connected devices powered by this embedded internet. Our first speaker today is Steve Palermo. Steve is a product manager for Intel's Embedded Communications Group and is responsible for the performance product lines. Prior to joining Intel, Steve, as an engineering lead, successfully co-led satellite mission planning scheduling for Motorola's Iridium Satellite Network, the first truly global space-based voice and data communication system. Steve received a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering and computer science from Arizona State University in 1989, and he has his MBA from Arizona State University in 1999. So with that, Steve, I want to let you get into discussions on the Xeon 5500 for us.
Great. Thank you very much, Jerry. This is Steve Palermo. And today I'll be kicking things off by introducing everyone to some of the building blocks that we use to address the 15 billion build-out, and specifically focusing on the communication infrastructure. So I'll be talking about those ingredients that we have just launched about 15 days ago, and Jim will follow up with some actual products using these silicon ingredients. Basically, I will be covering two sections in the next 10 minutes. I'll be giving everyone a platform overview, and I'll touch on a few of some of our technical highlights as it relates to the 15 billion communication infrastructure build-out. We are going to save Q&As to the very last portion of the presentation, so be sure you note those down and put those in the queue for when we are finished. So as Jerry mentioned, our prediction here for 15 billion intelligent connected devices is one of the major drivers of a communication infrastructure build-out. So today I'll be talking about one such product that addresses this market driver. When we look at those customers who are servicing the communication infrastructure build-out, they basically can be categorized into four different needs. Number one, legacy needs, the need to support both old and the need to support both new telecommunications applications and technologies. Security, so as the internet traffic and connected device traffic increases, there's a growing need to secure those communications without introducing latency. And same goes for the network. More connected devices requires more network traffic without sacrificing or minimizing headroom use on some of our processors. And last but not least, one of the main areas that we focus on is increasing capacity within the same footprint or real estate. So I'll be talking to the platform and how we address some of these needs, legacy, security, networking, and density. And then, as I mentioned, Jim will come in with some real-life examples of how these Intel ingredients are put to use. First, I wanted to start with a 30-second overview of our Intel processor 5500 series. Again, this was launched on March 30th, 2009. Here's some of the highlights of this Xeon class product. So number one, it is built on Intel's Xeon brand, which means that the RAS features are included in the platform. Those features are generally valued by customers that appreciate maximum data integrity and maximum availability of their systems, such as communication infrastructure and 24/7 requirements. With the release of our 5500 series, we've been able to increase the performance up to 1.6x in the same TDP envelope over and above our previous 45-nanometer processor, the Harpertown or Intel 5400 series. We basically use the publicly available SPECint numbers shown there on the bottom to make that calculation. One additional feature that one of many features that we offer is extended lifecycle support. So when we launch our product, we support that product for a minimum of 7 years. And as you'll see here in a couple minutes, we do have a couple of exclusive embedded features to address the communication infrastructure needs. I'll spend a couple minutes to talk about some of our global features on the product, both the ECG side, Embedded Communication Group, and our Enterprise Server or SPG platform. Then I'll touch on a couple of exclusive embedded features that Jim will also reinforce and mention during his portion of actual products using these devices. So first of all, as I mentioned, this was launched 2 weeks ago. Features include Intel's latest microarchitecture or latest innovations. This is a 45-nanometer CPU. What we typically call the innovations in microarchitecture is our TOC. This is a TOC with an integrated memory controller with DDR3 support. Also new to the platform is PCI Express Gen 3, shown there on the associated what we call IOH or IO hub. In addition to those technology or innovations, we also are supporting and bringing directed I/O virtualization. We are introducing our QPI interconnection links, our turbo technologies, and hyper-threading technologies. Preserving the Xeon RAS features is item number two that we're highlighting. And third here, everything that we'll talk about in the 5500 platform is actually compatible with our enterprise server platform. So that enables customers to have a little bit more elbow room in terms of CPUs that they select. When we get down to the exclusive embedded or ECG features, as I mentioned, we do offer a longevity or a 7-year product supply support. We typically offer some lower TDP CPUs. I'll mention a couple of those today. In addition to the lower TDP CPUs, we do offer CPUs with a different, or we call robust thermal profile, ideally suited for some embedded and communication infrastructure applications such as NEBS and ATCA. Last but not least, we support the platform in either a one-socket or two-socket CPU configuration. So before I continue, we wanted to do a polling question. We'll take a minute or two. Please submit your answer here. We're trying to gauge when you would be planning on deploying your own Xeon 5500-based platform. Please take a minute to select your answer and click the Submit button. And Jerry, I believe we'll see the polling results here in a couple minutes. Is that correct?
No, they don't pop up on this particular tool, but you can keep going because it stays in another window.
Okay, great. I'll just go ahead and keep going. Thanks, Jerry. A little bit more detail on the ECG Intel Xeon 5500 platform overview. Top left, or on the left-hand side, you see the configuration in a dual processor mode and a single processor mode shown on the left. On the right, we like to highlight, especially for the communication infrastructure and the 15 billion massive infrastructure build-out, some of the specific and exclusive CPUs that our embedded group offers. Two such CPUs within the 55 series are the L5518, it's a quad core, and the L5508, which is a dual core. The dual core is specced at a 38-watt TDP, whereas the quad core is specced at a 60-watt TDP. Both of those CPUs have built in a thermal excursion or a robust thermal profile to accommodate those customers who are securing NEBS level 3 type logos and also building ATCA form factors. So this is an actual screenshot of our website and product brief. So I want to encourage you to look at more information about these processors and platform below when we reference the links. Last, I wanted to highlight a couple of the innovation technologies that we've added to this platform before Jim talks about some actual platforms. So first, what new to the 5500 series for embedded computing is technology we call here at Intel the Turbo Boost technology. And basically, for the processors that support Turbo Boost, if that processor is running below limits such as power consumption, processing capability, and temperature limits, the processor will dynamically increase the core frequency on one or more cores, providing upside processing power. We call this Intel Turbo Boost technology. We offer this technology on both our quad-core and dual-core CPUs. Next technology that you may have seen this before in previous Intel processor generations, but it's back. It's called Intel Hyper Threading technology. And basically, this is the ability to, for the processors that support this technology, enable simultaneous multi-processing. So in this slide here, I'm showing a single processor quad-core with hyper-threading technology support. So this gives our end users the ability to do 8 simultaneous threads. Of course, you can double the number of CPUs to drive up to 16 simultaneous threads on a single platform. Last technology that we want to highlight is our virtualization technology. This is a major evolution in virtualization technology for this platform. We have end-to-end virtualization. So whether you're on the network side or the I/O side or processor side, we have all three ingredients in lockstep here. First, we call the processor virtualization technologies VTX. We've also introduced the ability to do directed I/O, which enables the compartmentalization of VMM instantiations for directed I/O. So this is where we get into servicing both the old legacy telecommunication applications, which may be single-threaded and have needs to have direct connection to the I/O, along with servicing some of the new telecommunication applications, both on the same platform. In addition to that, we also offer our associated 10 gigabit Ethernet controller, which also has some additional connectivity VT technologies. I'm giving you just a quick appetizer here, and I'm going to encourage you to join in our embedded community, check out some of these technologies, check out some more of the product innovations. We have an embedded design center link shown here. We have product briefs and technical documents shown on the second link, and then we have some press information on Meet Your New Processor. And last but not least, we talk a little bit more about the 15 billion interconnected devices. So before I turn it back over to Jerry to summarize here, we have launched a new innovative product to address the massive infrastructure build-out 2 weeks ago, and I encourage you to spend some time to look at the information that's publicly available, and don't hesitate to contact your local Intel rep for more information. So with that, Jerry, I'm going to go ahead and turn it back to you.
Okay, thanks, Steve. What I'd like to do is remind everybody that there will be questions answered at the end of the session here, so please continue to submit your questions to us so we can take a look at them and get them queued up here when we get down to our next presenter. And our next presenter is Jim Renahan. Jim is the Director of Marketing and Business Development at Trenton Technology. Trenton is an associate member of the Intel Embedded and Communications Alliance. At Trenton Technology, Jim focuses on investigating new market opportunities, analyzing emerging technologies, and developing commercial marketing programs. A key role of Jim's is working with Trenton's engineering and manufacturing teams to define, develop, and deliver the next generation of dependable yet innovative edge card computing products. Jim holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Industrial Technology from the School of Science and Technology at my alma mater, Iowa State University. So with that, Jim, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thanks, Jerry. And what I want to do is take a few minutes here and talk about how all these connected devices and sensors are all going to play together from a embedded platform perspective. Specifically, we're going to talk about Trenton's upcoming 6900 embedded motherboard, the NTM 6900. Talk a few minutes on the capabilities of that and how it integrates the processors and chipsets that Steve just talked about, and spend the majority of our time talking about some applications capabilities and some of the basic watch-outs when it comes to applying these particular products. So here's our formal agenda here, and you can see we got quite a bit to talk about, so let's go ahead and get started. First of all, the platform itself, Trenton's NTM 6900, uses the Intel Xeon Series 5500 that was developed under the code name Nehalem EP. It's a dual processor system, supports a variety of different processor options. The ones highlighted there in the red box are the extended life processors and chipsets, and we're going to talk about some of those specific processor capabilities as it relates to the applications in terms of what Steve alluded to in the way of thermal design power and T-sub case excursions. The product itself, the chipset, is the Intel 5520 chipset. Specifically, it was developed under the code name Tylersburg, and the specific flavor is the Tylersburg 36D. This is the input-output hub that we talked about that has some nice capabilities in terms of eliminating components on the board itself. The product offers, in our particular implementation, six dual-channel memory interfaces, of which are DDR3. Three of these interfaces are connected to each processors, and the net result being that you have a total of 12 DDR3 DIMM sockets. Theoretically, you can put as much as 144 gigabytes of system memory into this particular product, with probably a theoretical maximum being somewhere in the 46 gig range, just simply due to availability of DIMMs today. Other features and design highlights for the NTM6900 include the basic form factor itself. It follows the SSI EEB version 1.0 form factor. Approximately about 12 inches wide by 13 inches deep, and we'll show a slide on that in a little bit. There's a TPM header for trusted platform management applications. For those applications that require a trusted computing system, there's also the capability of adding in an optional IPMI to support the intelligent platform management interface. There's a variety of option card slots on the board, from PCI Express Generation 2 to Generation 1, as well as a legacy PCI slot, which will come into play in some of these applications that we're going to talk about in a few minutes. The electrical links that feed the PCI Express slots include 3x8 and 2x4 Generation 2 links, as well as one of the slots driven by a Generation 1x4 link. There's quite a bit of extended I.O. capability built into the NTM6900 motherboard, from 4 gigabit Ethernet ports to a variety of USB and a number of SATA 3 ports that feature locking connectors for the application environments where vibration plays a key component. Here's a picture. It's of an engineering layout drawing of the product. As we discussed earlier, the basic size is 12 by 13 inches for this SSI EEB form factor. For those of you that are familiar with full-size ATX, the full-size ATX version 2.2 is 12 inches wide by 9.6 inches deep. So a little bit deeper, but there's quite a bit of capability packed into this product, as you'll see in a minute or two. Here's a little simplified version, and what I wanted to point out to you is this option card slot area in the upper left-hand corner. The longest slot on the extreme left is the legacy PCI slot. The other slots to the right are all the PCI Express slots. The longer of those three slots you see there are x16 mechanical PCI Express slots, and those are the ones that are driven by those x8 PCI Express electrical links we discussed. The shorter slots are mechanically x8 PCI Express slots, and those are driven by the x4 links. The rear panel I.O. area has been simplified. It actually extends almost to the edge of the card, and it has quite a bit of capability. That's where all the USB ports and those four Ethernet ports we talked about. And you can see where the DIMM slots line up in relation to the processors and the chipset as well. So now let's talk about some of the application areas. But before we do that, just we'll leave our discussion of the board itself, and this is the block diagram. Kind of busy slide, but there's a lot of capability built into this product to take advantage of the newfound functionality that are built into these extended life processors and chipsets. So you can see where the memories are connected directly to the processor. What's nice is the Intel QuickPath interface, not only between the processors and the IOH, but also between the two processors themselves. This is a capability in some applications that will become very critical because it allows the processors to share processing resources across that link. An FPGA is on this particular board, provides a variety of different diagnostic and health type of information. It's also flexible enough to be used for other type of specialty applications. And you can see on the left side of the diagram here where the PCI Express generation 2 and 1 electrical links are routed to each slot. And one of the performance capabilities of this system is to allow these I.O. communication slots to show up right at the IOH level. So that increases overall throughput speed, which is going to be key in a lot of the upcoming applications we're going to talk about. So finally, let's talk about the applications. What we're going to start with first is the requirement need. It's basically why this platform, what problem we're going to solve, and then we're going to get into the specific applications by the markets that we see here. So why this particular embedded motherboard? Well, when you really truly need to have longevity cycles of seven plus years, basically it's needed for a couple of different reasons. In the area of government type of applications in the military, some of these deployment cycle requirements are quite long. In the areas of medical, both from a diagnostic and a manufacturing standpoint, it's desirable not to have to go through and constantly reevaluate and requalify hardware platforms because of end-of-life issues due to the fact that it's a costly and time-consuming process to certify a system for those types of applications. This particular motherboard, as you saw in the overview, offers a variety of different PCI Express Gen 1, Gen 2 support. There's also the high-performance advantages that are inherently built in to the extended life processors and chipsets that really are going to come to the forefront when it comes time to integrate all these connected devices and sensors across the embedded internet. So what problems are we trying to solve? Yeah, for with these particular processors, as we talked about these SKUs before, there's a couple of low-power, high-performance dual and quad-core processor SKUs, and when you put them on a dual processor board, basically allows you to really effectively put together some pretty high-performance, low-profile type of systems in a 1U and 2U chassis design. Now, of course, in those smaller type systems, you can't take advantage of all the different slot count combinations in the NTM6900 motherboard. But using some riser cards, you can get a fair number of option cards in a small package. And again, the low voltage processor options with the TSUP case and TDP ratings that we're going to get into in a little bit basically allows you to design these type of chassis without having to really resort to too much in the way of exotic and expensive CPU cooling solutions. Again, we talked about the large number of PCI Express slots and the legacy PCI slot on this particular embedded motherboard. Provides an effective gap between the high slot counts that are inherent in passive systems where you might need 10, 12, 14, maybe as much as 18 in option card slots. This provides a good gap between if you don't need that much capability, but you need a little bit more than you can get from a shorter life motherboard with maybe 3, 4, or 5 slots. So this particular platform fills that niche for the different applications. And again, when you get up into the higher performance 3U and 4U chassis, you can fill up those slots and take full advantage of the whole system. And, of course, the number of I.O. Options and expanded capabilities that Trenton has built into this product really comes to the forefront in some of the specific applications, of which we're going to start talking about right now. So first of all, we got a little poll question here, so if you want to take some time and tell us what you might think about this. Might be a little premature, but this one's going to stay up here for a while. So anyway, so let's talk about the chassis themselves. Three common chassis. I have pictures here, the 1 and 2U chassis, and we'll go ahead and use that picture of the 4U to talk about both 3U and 4U, since a lot of today's option cards fit in a 3U chassis pretty nicely. So on a 1U chassis, likely, you know, not in all cases, but in most cases, you probably want to use a lower power processor in order to come up with the lowest possible profile cooling solutions you can have. So, for instance, if we go ahead and then use a 5508 or the L5518, we get a pretty effective TDP rating, as Steve mentioned earlier, of 38 and 60 watts, respectively. But more importantly, there's a TSUP case excursion capability of 85 degrees C in both of these, which allows us to get into those applications, particularly in the area of telecommunications, where you require a NEBS compliance capability. The TSUP case nominal for these two processors is 70 degrees C, but the NEBS compliance specification requires that you be able to handle an excursion temperature quite a bit higher. One thing to keep in mind, though, with 1U systems is the larger depth dimension. And this is because basically with that small height, everything's pretty much in a serial line. So typically 1U chassis have 26-inch depths are greater, so you need to keep that in mind when you come to deploy this system, make sure that the rack it's going to go in is actually deep enough to accommodate not only the chassis, but also the cable routings that go behind the chassis. The 2U solves that. It goes a little bit up in terms of height. It still needs some riser cards in order to take advantage of more of the option card slots afforded by the NTM 6900 embedded motherboard. But the key thing is the shallower dimensions, depth dimensions of the 2U basically allow you to get under 18 inches. A 17.8-inch depth dimension is pretty common for a 2U chassis, and that plays well in some particular applications. 3U and above, basically all your motherboard option card slots are open and available to you. Don't need any riser cards. You can go up in the full gamut of the Intel Xeon processor 5500 series. And basically you can have a greater number of drive, media, and power supply configurations available. So let's talk about the first application segment, this being in the area of communications, and specifically in a secure server application. These particular applications, be they in telecom or in government type of secure servers, are handling a lot of sensor information that is coming across various different Ethernet lines and whatnot. So the number of Ethernet ports afforded by the NTM 6900 really comes into play here. A lot of different sensor information both today and tomorrow, which is really key, and it plays well into this 7-plus year product availability, which becomes pretty much a requirement when you're talking to users in the air in the government sector. Don't really need any interface cards. The multiple Ethernet interfaces are pretty much handling the lion's share of the communication. So in this particular one, why use this particular product in terms of the embedded motherboard and the available Intel processors? It's basically this performance per watt capability of the two CPUs you see here. The high memory interface capability built into the architecture itself. This particular product, again, supports a series of six SATA 3 RAID capabilities for storage. And then, as we said, the Ethernet interfaces and the capability of supporting TPM 1.2 for those secure server applications that require trusted computing support. Next application area is a military application with shipboard. There's a lot of electronics on a boat these days, as you can well imagine. So in these type of applications, 3 and 4U chassis are pretty common because there's an awful lot of sensor information that's needed to drive the intelligence on today's modern Navy. So having 6 PCI Express and 1 PCI card is quite handy, because there's also, these ship designs are been around for a while, so there's also quite a few legacy sensors that are out there, and they're still being effectively deployed. In any military application, the longevity requirement is critical to meet the needs of the military. The BOM or bill of material cannot really significantly change in these particular applications. You do have a little bit of leeway in things like drive media, but they like to keep things pretty standard and available. So why use this one? Basically the number of option card slots, because we're interfacing to sensors that are in artillery systems, that are in communication systems, and you name it. This particular application didn't require, you know, the numbers of option card slots typical in a passive system, but yet it required more than was common in a normal motherboard arrangement. And again, the extended life capability of the subcomponents themselves basically are required to meet the deployment cycle requirements of this particular application. A little bit different military application is from the area of missile telemetry. In these particular applications, generally 1U enclosures are the ones that are used the most. The reason for that is these control rooms that gather the telemetry data from the rocket or satellite is generally very cramped, and they need to stack a bunch of these in to get in a relatively small space. Longevity requirement, again, is absolute requirement because from the time that the concept is developed through the deployment cycle can extend 7 years and often beyond. Again, the bill of material shouldn't be changed a whole lot during this deployment cycle. One thing, again, you got to keep in mind is it is 1U enclosure. You generally want a cooling solution stack up height somewhere in the neighborhood of about 1.1 to 1.45 inches. Less is better, but with these new Intel 5500 low-voltage processors, really helps us meet these requirements quite effectively. So why this particular motherboard in this specific application? Again, we didn't need any option cards. In this application, each motherboard processes a predefined set of telemetry data, depending upon which stage we are in the launch. So the six SATA 3 RAID drives come into play here because they're gathering and storing this information for tracking purposes or archival type reasons. The additional Ethernet interface is divided into the motherboard, really allows the system to gather data effectively and share it across the various networks that are deployed in these type of systems. This particular customer required front access drive removal for his application, such that the military personnel could easily swap out and change drives as needed in the application. In medical applications, a little bit different tact. 2U servers boxes are pretty common. They're generally built into the things like a CAT scan, as we're shown here in this photo. Longevity requirement is absolutely required for a lot of reasons. For hospital certification agencies involved in signing off on the deployment of this rather expensive asset, being a CAT scan system, and oftentimes the FDA is involved. For that reason, the bill of material or BOM cannot change at all during this cycle without incurring some significant cost due to having to recertify a system due to a change. This particular architecture on the motherboard comes in handy because of the number of and amount of data that's processed through, for instance, a typical CAT scan system. As a lot of you know, CAT scans deploy multiple work by taking multiple slices of imagery as it's scanning, and as you can imagine, that video imagery has an awful lot of information in it. The direct connect to the CPUs from the system memory helps increase this processing speed, as well as the way the interface cards play into the IOH. The SATA 3 RAID array is critical for local image storage before final archival, and the multiple Ethernet interfaces built into the Trenton NTM6900 allows the information, diagnostic information, to be shared amongst various doctor locations to speed diagnostics. This is a very expensive asset for a typical hospital system, so they want to keep moving folks through these things as fast as possible. 2U gives you a little bit more capability in terms of allowable cooling solution stack up. Generally, it's in the neighborhood of 2.6 to 3 inches. Again, less is better, but it allows you a little bit more flexibility when it comes to choosing which processor you like in the application. Continuing on with a medical application, this is actually a combination of industrial automation and pharmaceutical manufacturing. Custom enclosures are generally used in these particular systems and are usually built right into the package inspection machine. Sometimes they're on a shelf, sometimes they're in a special purpose chassis. So a lot of flexibility is required in this particular mechanical arrangement. But the system controller itself, in this case the NTM6900 embedded motherboard, is handling sensor information from a variety of different sources, from cameras, frame grabber cards, indexing sensors for the packaging pill bottles that are moving through the system to fill levels and whatnot. Longevity requirement is absolutely necessary because anything you put in a pharmaceutical manufacturing must be certified by the Food and Drug Administration, at least in the United States. There is companion industries in other countries as well. Anything you change in the system automatically triggers a recertification expense. So it's very, very critical for the OEMs that are servicing these particular things to have products and subsystems that do not change. So why this particular one? The high-speed motherboard memory interfaces, again, inherent in the architecture are absolutely key in processing all this information through the packaging and sorting machines in the pharmaceutical manufacturing. Again, the RAID array comes into play, and the multiple card slots, again, are needed to support the various frame grabbers, lighting cards, sensor interfaces, you name it. In this industrial automation application, this is circuit board wafer manufacturing. 4U enclosures tend to be the norm in these particular machines. The longevity requirement, again, is important, but for a different reason than what we talked about before. In a wafer machine, there are specialty tools that are developed to process and create the wafers themselves. They're very expensive. Generally, when a tool is designed, it must be in use for as long as possible in order to achieve some of the ROI objectives of the organization. So, again, longevity requirement is an absolute requirement, but it's more from an ROI type of standpoint than any type of quasi-government regulation, if you will. Some of these sensor interfaces, as a result, are quite old. Some of them still do their jobs very effectively using a 32-bit, 33 megahertz PCI interface. So that legacy PCI interface slot comes very handy. In these machines, generally there's a mixture of tools, from legacy tools to the latest and greatest tools. And some of these latest wafer processing tools use the PCI Express Generation 2 interface. So why this particular card? Well, you know, obviously the big driver here is the ability to support multiple card slots. And again, the inherent processing capabilities built into the Intel Xeon Processor 5500 series really comes into play. Once again, because the idea here is to process as many wafers as possible in as short a time as possible, as you can imagine. In our final application, this one is a government application for toll booths. Today's toll booths are quite a bit different than some of the original toll booths of long ago. I used to live up near the Chicago area, so you know I used to learn to dread toll booths, and I assume there's probably still a boatload of them around Chicago. But in any event, today's toll booths deploy some automatic lane capabilities where an RFID tag may be on your vehicle. You may prepay for the privilege of driving on a particular road. The net result is that as you come through the toll booth, you have a lot of sensors that need to pick up all that information, both from a tag, the RFID tag, from your license plate, and from a visual representation of your image and crunch it all together. So as a result, these systems take a long time to develop from concept through deployment. They also, once they are deployed, have to run without any engineering support. So the idea is to have stable systems that handle sensor information, connects them all together both today and throughout the longevity cycle of when this toll booth is, or for how long this toll booth is going to be out in operation. So why the embedded motherboard from Trend in this particular application? The high-speed memory interfaces, again, the direct connects to the CPUs. All this comes into play in these applications because remember all that sensor information we're gathering? That sensor information has to be crunched together in real time, almost real time, if you will, to try to increase the speed through the toll booths. The ultimate goal of these things is to have vehicles move through at near highway speeds, although I don't think I want to be around to see that. But in any event, you get the idea. We have to crunch all this information together for not only counting and revenue purposes, but also to catch violators. This is how some of the technology has evolved to the point where if you decide to beat the toll booth, you wind up with a ticket delivered to you in the mail a few weeks later. So anyway, sort of an example of Big Brother, but again, you know, it points out the need that there's a lot of connected devices and sensors across this thing we call the embedded Internet that all need to play together and play together in as quickly as possible. So in summary, for the Trenton application, or segment here, I skipped one too much here. Hang on. Got a little ahead of myself here, so let me do a, here we go. Oops. Now I'm all lost here. Here we go. Okay. Anyway. Sorry. Technical difficulties. Okay. So basically, the Trenton particular product that we've come out, or that we'll be coming out with shortly, the NTM6900, basically adds the capability to handle not only today's device connections, but also tomorrow's connections. And we do that with a variety of things we just talked about a little bit. We've been doing this for a long time in different applications. We have a lot of experience dealing with some of these customer requirements, capabilities. And, oh, here's where I got confused. Okay. And basically, these increasing number of connected devices, again, they're going to need embedded processing platforms because, as we've seen in some of these applications, you have not only today's number of interconnects, but you have tomorrow's number of interconnects. And when you're talking embedded systems deployed over a long period of time, you need to be able to support those while trying to minimize the any reoccurring engineering expenses. So the extended life version of these Intel Xeon processors 5500 series, as well as the Intel 5520 chipset, basically is what's going to be the primary driver toward enabling this longevity and performance. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Jerry, and I guess we have a few questions that have come in.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jim. That was a really good description of those various applications. I like to see some of the in-depth discussion on those and why you would use a product like the NTM6900 in each of those applications. It helps understand better why and where you would use those products. We do have quite a few questions that have come in. I would like to remind everybody that we're going to continue to take questions past the hour for about 15 minutes, but those will only be via instant messaging chat. We're going to do the next few questions live here. So I'm going to go ahead and I think I'll pick one for you, Steve. One of the questions was, what's the difference between the quad core 5540, 5520, and 5518? Can you maybe clarify that just a little bit?
Yeah, what I'll do, Jerry, is I'm gonna ricochet the question on to Bhupesh. Bhupesh, can you answer that one?
You're a technical expert there. All right.
Yep.
Sure. I believe that Sherman is asking for 5540 and 5504 instead of 5520 as written in the question. We have a couple of aspects that are different. Like one is the TDP in 5540 and 5504 are 80 watt TDP range, whereas 5518 is 60 watt. Other than is in the turbo mode, in 5540 we have turbo mode enabled. Turbo mode is not enabled in 5504 and 5518. We also have the turbo mode enabled. Then the T case, 5518 is a high T case SKU, whereas 5540 and 5504 are the standard SKUs. Then the cache size, 5540 has 8 MB of cache, whereas 5504 has 4 MB of cache. And again, 5518 has 8 MB of cache. Then clock speed, 5540 is 2.53 GHz, 5504 is 2 GHz, and 5518 is 2.13 GHz. And the last, the DDR speed, the maximum DDR speed on 5540 is 1066, whereas on 5504 it's 800 megahertz, and 5518 it's again 1066 megahertz.
I'm assuming there's a chart they can go to that's on the embedded site that maybe does a nice job of comparing those as well.
Yes.
It sounds like there's quite a few varieties.
Right.
Okay. Next one, Jim, this one came in on the 6900, and it looks like it's talking about the PCI slots. It's asking about including by-16 electrical slots and by-8 mechanical, and also do the by-8 slot support both by-8 and by-4 cards. Does that make sense to you?
Yep. Yeah, well, the second one's easy. Yes, the by-8 slots do support both by-8 and by-4 cards. The by-16 slots that are on the motherboard are a mechanical slots driven by by-8 electrical links. And the reason for that is the capability of the chipsets used on the NTM6900. So yes, has a by-16 mechanical slot, but the by-16 mechanical slots are driven with by-8 electrical links.
Okay. What are the temperature ranges for the 6900 for the various so people can consume for the various applications like military.
Was that for me?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, the 6900 supports the temperature ranges that are built into the processors themselves. Now, I think the question may relate to some mil-spec componentry. The temperature ranges on some of those mil-spec requirements, depending on the requirement, there are different degrees of mil-spec requirements, range pretty high. So we'd have to probably know a little bit more detail about what specific degree centigrade we're looking into. Some of the other components on the board are not mil-spec components per se, but Trenton has a long history of deploying some of these systems in various different military applications. And working with integrators and OEMs and whatnot, and ourselves, we come up with some ideas on how to support some of these higher temperature requirements.
Okay. Steve, I got a question that's not on our list that's coming in, but it's a question I have, and that's operating system support. What operating systems does the 5500 operate with?
Yeah, the platform has been validated with a number of operating system bases, and Jerry, to get that, I'll have to point you to the product brief, which I'm pulling up right here. While I'm trying to pull that up, just to annotate Bhupesh's response, anyone online could go to ARK.intel.com to get a view of our CPU stack up at Intel.
Okay. Can we do another question quick while you're looking that up? Or
Yeah, go ahead and might want to feed Jim with a couple.
Yeah, Jim, cover a couple questions with you here real quick. You talk a lot about the 7-year product availability and support for these different applications, and I understand that's really critical for a lot of applications, but are there some that probably don't have such a high priority on that?
Yeah, I mean, a lot depends. Even within some of the military applications, there's mission-critical and non-mission-critical type of applications. So, yeah, there are some applications that wouldn't necessarily require it per se to meet, say, the letter of the contract, but at the end of the day, having it really winds up in over the lifetime of these systems that are deployed for a long period of time, really, at the end of the day, wind up with a substantial cost savings because you're not constantly re-engineering hardware because something went obsolete after, you know, a year or 18 months.
Right. Okay. One of the things I noticed, you talked about this SSI form factor, this system server form factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does Trenton participate in the SSI forum where they define those types of things, or what's your relationship there?
Well, we monitor all relevant standard organizations, including the SSI guys. We don't take an active participation unless there's a burning issue that comes up that we feel pretty strongly about, but so far those guys have done a pretty good job coming up with the various different standards for the industry. Okay. So I guess it's a yes and no response.
Do they look at the embedded market needs and do any special things, or do you guys bring some of that value to some of the work that they're doing perhaps?
Well, that's in, you know, if we see something that cries out for some more support from an embedded standpoint, that's when we get involved. But so far, we haven't seen that to be a need with the SSI.
Okay. Steve, I'm going to bounce back to you on the operating system question. Do you find what you're looking for?
Yeah, I went to my product brief to consult that so I could give an accurate answer. So we do have a number of operating systems that are validated with the platform, Microsoft XP Server, Windows 2003. Then on the Linux side, we've got Red Hat Linux Enterprise. We also have SUSE Linux Enterprise 10. On the embedded side, we also have Wind River VxWorks and Wind River Linux to name a few. I know there's a number of other OSVs, operating system vendors, that are in the queue, especially on the embedded side, that are pending.
Okay. This one I'm going to direct to you, Jim. And you made the comment about being able to support up to 144 gigabytes of system memory, and I wish I had that on my desktop right now, right? It's not going to happen for a while here. Someday. And you kind of mentioned that the realistic number was, what, 46 gigabytes maybe?
Yeah, usually around 48 or so. And, you know, 144, will anybody ever do it? Yeah, got a lot of money, yeah. But right now, DDR DIMMs, at least I did a quick look the other day, and it looks like there's going to be some 8-gigabyte DIMM sticks coming out, a relatively short order. So they'll be expensive, but again, the system is capable. Most people seem to be centered around the 4-gigabyte or 2-gigabyte DDR3 DIMM usage in a lot of different embedded applications.
What types of applications, or what might they be doing with that, you know, the larger memory capacities?
Not me. The only thing that comes to mind that I can think of right now is spammers.
Okay. I'd like to remind everybody that we'll still continue to take questions online. I think we'll go ahead and wrap up the verbal part of this. Thank the presenters for their material today. But we will be available for another 15 minutes while we go offline and respond to your questions that we didn't get to via the chat responses here. So, as always, today's events and previous ECASTs are archived on the Open Systems Media website. These archived ECASTs can be replayed at your convenience, and today's event will be posted very shortly. I'd like to give a special thank you to Steve and Jim for today's ECAST. I know I learned a lot about the processor and the board technologies here, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens as we get to the 15 billion connected devices here. It's going to be a pretty incredible world as we see intelligence on all these devices. I hope that you, the audience, will find this information helpful in making your future design decisions. I'd like to thank you for participating in today's ECAST. I invite you to return for any future events that we have, and please pass the word on to others who might benefit from this type of information. On the behalf of Open Systems Media, I'd like to wish you a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now continue the live chat Q&A session over the web presentation. Please remain on the line and send in any further questions you may have. Thank you.